Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no privacy. Whoa, I always feel like somebody's watching me.
7 minutes after the hour of 5 on this, the drive home at 5. And in this presidential campaign, this season, we have been subjected to a number of individuals, some nameless, others who have been busting their buttons and bridges with pride by saying that they were capable of hacking and, in fact, did hack. We believe the Russians hacked the DNC email system, and there were many embarrassing drops right before the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. If you open up the New York Post today, you see that somebody had hacked Colin Powell, the former Secretary of State's private email, and came up with a number of emails in which he was critical of Hillary, but also critical of Trump. And we've been told by Julian Assange, as he is in that Ecuadorian embassy in England, trying to not get transported to Sweden and face rape charges there by a group of Swedish meatball judges, that he's got a group of drops in October, a big October surprise before the general vote on November 8th, really changing the landscape of this campaign. On the line to discuss it, Ellis Hennigan, longtime reporter for Newsday and political analyst. Welcome to the drive home at 5, Ellis. See if we can get Ellis up there. Are you there, Ellis?
I am. Hey, Curtis.
Oh, I lost you in the abyss there. Apparently, our system was being hacked by those who were actually trying to get some porno connections. We've got some real...
You know, I got to tell you, I'm feeling very dirty today.
You should.
I'm in receipt of stolen property, right?
You should, because there is so much hacking going on, and people in general, as they've got back in their cars, their trucks, their vans, making the trip home, listening to us on their terrestrial radio, they know of how many emails or texts they may have sent during the day that would be considered triple X rated, and I don't know if they'd want the whole world reading about it.
I mean, are you offering to open up your email password for everybody to read anything you've ever written in an email, Curtis?
Ellis Hennigan, remember, that became a contentious moment in one of my many trips to family court and one of my many divorce actions when, in fact, one of my exes, I forget which one, number two, three, or four, actually produced those documents in court. It was
Ouch.
Embarrassing!
Ouch! Ouch!
But anyway.
This is something that we in the media need to get our heads around. Listen, it is revealing. If you can read somebody's secret emails or listen in on their phone calls or know about their secret pillow talk, it does tell you stuff about that person's character and sometimes things that are titillating and interesting. But I don't know, man. There's something really creepy about it.
Yeah, but you're in the news business. You know, if you don't run with it, one of your competitors will.
I know.
Whether it came from an organized effort of Russian hackers or some pimply kid with a laptop living in the basement of his mom while he's knocking back Red Bulls and just hacking away, it's going to come out because there's no universal code amongst journalists or bloggers to suggest, oh, no, that's private. We stay away from it.
No, it's an impossible equation. You're absolutely right. I mean, here you are, you know, the New York Times or Newsday, some you know, august journalistic organization, and if you don't do it, you're in the dust. There's no good answer that I can figure out.
Well, balance. That's what I think. Balance, as my grandfather Fidel Bianchino used to teach me, Ellis. And that is, we've learned a lot about the communications of the DNC.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see the communications of the RNC, because you know these guys and gals have been probably like writing the most horrid emails about Donald Trump.
That is right, when they're not writing them about Hillary. I mean, listen, everybody, it's human nature. There's no getting away from it. And if, listen, if you could train yourself not to say anything incriminating in email ever, if you think it, hey, the Russians are going to get their hands on it, or it's going to end up in public, you'd be communicating some other way. I mean, gossip is part of the human condition.
Well, for instance, in one of the many drops of Colin Powell's private emails, he comments apparently to somebody he was writing to that he has serious doubts about Clinton's health. Now, this is long before this became an issue in the campaign. Quote, she doesn't look good, Powell said in the email. She is working herself to death. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, and he said equal stuff about Trump. He's an international pariah, and a guy who has no idea what he's doing. I mean, here's one takeaway on the Powell stuff, Curtis. Colin Powell seems to be pretty much where most Americans are, which is that they don't like either of these people very much.
No doubt, but what about the whole nature of, if I wrote this in a letter to you, Ellis Hennigan, snail mail, and the U.S. Postal Service and their many bundle blessers finally got it crossed down in 4 days. If somebody picked that up along the way, that's a federal crime.
Yeah.
Yet, we don't seem to have any real enforcement. In fact, if you notice, just the other day, one of the biggest hackers of all time, Snowden, was appealing to the President of the United States in which he was seeking a pardon. For what he has been accused of. For instance, would you even consider giving him a pardon, Ellis?
No, and it's not going to happen. Curtis, the problem here, though, isn't that it's legal. This is clearly illegal. The problem is that most of the people doing it are outside of any kind of legal jurisdiction. Where are you planning to go get Snowden if you want him?
Yeah, but also, he did us a service by dropping information that we were told was sensitive information, which in many instances proved not to be sensitive at all. It showed corruption within our government, the lies that our government tells us. In many instances, isn't he a whistleblower? Isn't he somebody that we should be putting on a pedestal and applauding?
Well, I don't know, Curtis. I'm surprised to hear you trying to turn him into a hero. I mean, I'm not saying some of that stuff isn't revealing and necessary to know, and I wish we knew it, and I like knowing stuff, but I don't think philosophically you can defend someone going and stealing secret information and putting it out there. You want to say that's okay no matter who does it?
No, but would you equate it as being the equivalent of what we saw during the Watergate years of Richard Nixon's presidency when he had no challenge whatsoever from McGovern to lose the presidency? And yet, there he was, raiding the offices of the psychiatrist of the individual responsible for releasing the Pentagon Papers, breaking into the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the old Watergate Hotel. That kind of stuff I understand, but this is really more in a gray area, isn't it?
It is. Listen, maybe I'm an old-style, boring journalist, Curtis, but I don't believe in stealing stuff. I'd rather find out some other way. I'd rather have sources tell me. I'd rather do shoe-leather reporting. That idea of I commit a burglary, put that in my newspaper or on my website, and somehow I'm a hero. I just don't buy it.
Daniel Ellsberg gives us the Pentagon Papers. He's vilified by Nixon and other super American patriots, and yet I think he did us all a service.
Listen, I'm happy to know it. I'm not claiming that it's not interesting or that it's not revealing, or maybe even in some cases advances democracy. You're in some dicey areas here, my friend.
All right. Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, who is basically in the embassy in Ecuador to avoid extradition to Sweden, face rape charges from some Swedish meatball judges there. He says he is going to drop the motherload of all hacked emails as an October surprise.
He may.
And if that information is revealing to us as the electorate that maybe whoever it affects, whether the Trump candidacy or the Hillary candidacy that we've been lied to, isn't it important that we know that before November 8th?
I hear you. I can't argue with what you're saying. I want to know everything, but you cannot ask me to defend armed robbery or burglary, even if I want to have the loot.
And what about in the case of Anthony the Weiner Wiener and the many texts that obviously we were provided, courtesy of many tabloids?
compared to some of this other stuff, that looks like pretty small potatoes, doesn't it?
So are you suggesting another comeback by Anthony the Wiener Wiener when compared to all of this?
You know what really happened to me, Curtis, I think, is that we have lost the glow for all of these people. Nobody thinks any of them has any real character, right? They're a bunch of craven, ambitious people being manipulative, trying to get our support. And it's probably more or less equally true of all of them. You tell me who the hero here is. I don't know.
And not only that, we seem to get a vicarious thrill when all of them are cold busted, when their private communications of intrigue are revealed to all of us.
Hey, I never said I wasn't interested in scurrilous gossip. Let me hear it. I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, with the drop of Colin Powell's private emails, the result of some hacker out there, whether it was the pimply kid with his laptop knocking back Red Bulls in the basement of his mother next to the boiler, or some nefarious plot by former KGB agents of the Soviet Union, get ready, because apparently, according to Julian Assange, we're going to get the motherlode, the tsunami of all drops as part of an October surprise.
Curtis Lewa, The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Were you in the yard with your wife and children?
527.
Working on some
on this week in which we memorialize the dead and injured that occurred on 9/11. Naturally, both here in the fields of Pennsylvania and in Washington, D.C. at the Pentagon. We saw the commemoration. A lot more attention paid to it because Hillary Rodham Clinton, Her Majesty, collapsed like a sack of potatoes. We'll give you an update momentarily on the release of her health report. I wonder if it was like Trump's on Dr. Oz. One page. But anyway, you would think people close to where the attack took place, World Trade Center, the Pit, within walking distance of City Hall, where your mayor presides, Comrade Bill de Blasio, not mine, I didn't elect him, and the 51 deadbeats and slackers of the New York City Council. You would think, wow, you know, that's a clear reminder. Well, for those that work near the Pentagon or the fields of Western Pennsylvania where that flight went down, right, you would think it even resonates more. Well, not to this self-hating American, City Councilman Jumaane Williams, who decided today that he would not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance at the start of a city council hearing, and in fact sat in protest, he claims, against racial injustice with a nod to Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49er quarterback. And I got to tell you, he had his head bowed in prayer. Hey, Jumaane, you praying for the two who were killed during Juve, the four others who were injured, a second year back-to-back, belly-to-belly, because you, in your stubborn way, insisted that Juve, the pre-parade for the annual West Indian Caribbean Day parade, must continue because it's cultural? Were you praying for them? Not. Hey, by the way, Jumaane, and the rest of you 51 slackers and deadbeats of the city council, you took a vacation on August 17th, and you came back into session 2 weeks later. And this after you gave yourselves a fat 32% raise and now rake in $150,000 a year. But six of you couldn't even show up for work, even though it's a full-time job, forcing the cancellation of a key committee meeting over public safety. Guess who one of the six were? The deadbeats and slackers and no-shows. That's right. The self-hating American, Jumaane Williams. Jumaane Williams couldn't show up that day. Nor could these other infamous individuals. Let me read you how busy these city council people were. That they couldn't show up for a public safety meeting that was not just any old meeting. It had some really serious elements, which I'll get into. There was not only Jumaane Williams, no show. Rory Lanceman of Queens, no show. Hey, Richie Torres of the Bronx, no show. Vinny Gentile from Bay Ridge, no show. Rafael Espinal of Brooklyn, no show. And Julissa is a woman who was signing checks for Hiram Montserrat, who was ripping off a nonprofit. She was his chief of staff. She should be in jail for that. Well, maybe she dropped time. Maybe she became a cooperating witness. We'll never know because it's hush, hush, mush, mush. But all six of these folks decided that they had more important things to do than earn their $150,000 as slackers and deadbeats. And the colleagues who did show up, they were defending their missing in action colleagues. Quote, I think it's more related to this being the first hearing of getting back into session, the last vestige of a holiday before we get full blast into session. Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? As they were dealing with how the NYPD publicly discloses sex offenses, of which you're not going to learn about them in the subways because they're classified as misdemeanors, and there's been a 50% increase in sex crimes, hate crimes, domestic violence incidents, requiring the department to post more data online and break out cases that occur in public housing. Serious issues that required serious discussion. But these six deadbeats and slackers couldn't find the time to show up. But, oh, Jumaane Williams styling and profiling today at the start of the city council meeting, deciding that he would decline to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, you know something, Jumaane? Why don't you find yourself a country that you can, as we would say, or as Mitt Romney would say, remove yourself, self-deport yourself. Because you're a disgrazia. You're a shanda. You're a self-hating American.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life in plastic. It's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination. Life is your creation.
Come on, Barbie. Let's go party.
I'm a Barbie girl.
5:40 on your drive home at 5. And it's interesting because the Barbie Girl song reminds me that there are really two forms of medical service. There's the essential, which we've been debating. As Dr. Oz took that one piece of paper today, waved it in his hand and said, oh, Donald Trump is A-OK. I believe everything I read on this. Oofa. And then, as Ken Duffy has just announced, the Hillary Rodham Clintonistas have released a prepared note about her medical condition, saying she takes a handful of medications included for her thyroid, that she has current medical conditions including hypothyroidism and seasonal pollen allergies, and that Clinton's lab work was normal. She has a blood pressure of 100 over 70, and as you know, when I'm with Kubi in the afternoons from 12 to 3, mine has skyrocketed to 220 over 120, and has had a normal mammogram and breast ultrasound. Now, I don't know if that's going to satisfy the critics, but that's what we call essential medical services. As I look at Hillary, it does not look like she's had a nip and a tuck. As I look at Donald Trump, he may have had some work. But there is a growing movement now, not just amongst women, but increasingly amongst men, to get non-essential cosmetic work done, to get a little nip and a tuck, to give them more of a youthful appearance. And on the line to discuss that is Harrison Sternman. Harris Sternman. He's the chief of plastic surgery at Holy Name Medical Center in New Jersey. Thanks for joining us, Harris, on the drive home at 5.
Well, thank you very much, Curtis.
You know, when I first noticed this, Harris, in fact, he's appearing tonight. Regis Philbin is with Don Rickles. I was up close with Regis. Like tonight, he's going to be on the stage at the Bergen Performing Arts Center. And I noticed, wow, this guy really had some good work. You know, there's no sags. It doesn't look like he has that cat face at all. I saw that also on George Steinbrenner when I got up close with him one time. But it didn't appear that a lot of men back then, we're talking like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, were having facial surgery or what we would call cosmetic surgery. But your business is starting to boom, isn't it?
Oh, that's very true. I mean, certainly more men are proceeding to go ahead with procedures, both surgical as well as non-surgical, in order to enhance their appearances as well as to appear younger and healthier.
Now, am I correct, but it seems that a man's face handles the plastic surgery a little better than women, because with women sometimes it seems to grossly deform them.
Well, I think that really depends on the technique and the surgeon who is doing the procedure. Men's Facelifts are a bit more difficult. They tend to bleed more. The skin is thicker. It's also a little harder to hide the scars in the male because of the presence of the sideburn.
Now, what age are men generally coming to you and other practitioners in the field of cosmetic surgery?
Well, since there's so many different aspects to cosmetic surgery, facial, body, a lot of that will depend on the ages will depend on what they're pursuing. So, for example, if you have a teenager or a 20-something-year-old male who's developed gynecomastia or enlargement of his breast tissue, you'll see teenagers pursuing that because it's very uncomfortable. If you're in the gym, if you're in the locker room, you have to take your T-shirt off or go to the swimming pool, and you're having a set of breasts, you know, certainly that can be very psychologically deforming. In addition, it's even worse. It can be unilateral where it's just one breast that might be enlarged. So you'll see that younger group coming in to have that treated. Then when you start to see men in their 30s, starting to accumulate fat around their midsection, whether it's on the abdomen or on their flanks, that's where you'll see those patients coming in for liposuction. Getting into the late 30s, early 40s, where people are beginning to get bags underneath their eyes, so you can treat some of those bags surgically. Some of those bags can also be treated using fillers in order to mask that hollow or that crease between the lower lid and between the cheek. Because one of the problems as we get older is we start to lose fat from our face, we start to lose bony support from our face. In addition, the skin, whether it's due to sun damage or other environmental issues, the skin starts to get very loose and saggy. So fillers can be used to reinflate the cheeks and restore more youthful appearance, to lift up the skin, which has begun to fall down and begin to form jowls and begin to form marionette lines.
Well, Harris Sturman, there's no doubt many more men are getting that nip in the tuck, and I've certainly had inflated skin over the years. That usually came after I got hit with a bat, a stick, a pipe, and it moved my collagen around. But I don't think that's what you want to go through to maintain a youthful, vigorous appearance, do you?
Curtis Sliwa, The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
As we continue on your drive home at 5. And tomorrow, Thursday, is the start of the 11-day official San Gennaro Festival, which has been a feast for fraud, past and present. And let's hope that they're running a fair and straight festival this time. That hasn't been the case in the past. In fact, there's a charity. They're a 501c3 charity that was supposedly helping impoverished children back in Naples. But as my grandfather, Fidel Bianchino, told me when he first took me to my first San Gennaro Festival back in the early 70s, that the only children being helped were the members of the Genovese crime family. Because as you make your first stop past the Church of the Most Precious Blood, you will see that in the background, as has been in the past, and we'll see if this year that's true, because I'll be going Saturday with the kickoff festival and ceremony at 4 o'clock. If they have those Fugazi fake priests who would run games of chance that were totally rigged against anybody coming in for the festival. And then at different intervals, they have the statue of San Gennaro. And the bulls would parade it around. And you had a requirement, if you were an observant Catholic or Italian in good standing, to festoon it with all kinds of currency. Naturally, if you put $100 bills on it, you were given a nod. $10, not so much. $5, oof, a dollar. You're just a cheapskate. You're throwing nickels around like manhole covers. And you would actually pin that currency on the vestments of the statue of San Gennaro. And this would prove that you were truly faithful. And then they would bring it into the backyard of the Church of the Most Precious Blood. And the Gambino capos and foot soldiers would strip it off, strip off all the currency. And then they would bring it to the nearby Triangle Athletic Club, as they used to call it, or Social Club right there on Sullivan Street, where Vinny the Chin Gigante and Benny Eggs Mangano would divide up the loot and then give it out to the various members of the Genovese crime family. And I remember when my grandfather, Fidel Bianchino, told me that in Broken Bodies, I said,
hey, Pa, you're going to go to hell for saying this. And he said, mio figlio, which means child of mine. You'll see, you'll see. And boy, did I ever see. Years later, U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White filed an indictment against the charity charging that the feast was a fraud, that almost none of the money went to churches or children. And then my very dear Cumbada Cheech, Rudy Giuliani, cracked down on the San Gennaro Festival and eliminated almost all of the mob influence. But about 2 years ago, the New York Daily News revealed that the Feast of San Gennaro donates under 5% of its earnings to charity. That's just $210,000 of the $4.4 million raised between 2007 and 2012. That's one percentage point more than the mafia turned over to good causes when they ran the show. And I would have thought that this eager beaver attorney general of the state of New York, Eric Schneiderman, who was suing Donald Trump over Trump University and now also the Trump Foundation because of its donation to the campaign of the attorney general of the state of Florida, so that she would all of a sudden ignore investigating the Trump University improprieties. I would have thought that, gee, Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who so lusts to want to be governor, like before him, Spitzer, who was attorney general, became the governor. And then Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. It's a stepping stone. I would have thought for sure he would have wanted to give the San Gennaro Festival's Fugazi charity a nice colonic. I even had a conversation with him in the green room in New York One, and he said, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to get involved. I've got investigators on it. They'll go down. They'll get some cannolis, some strugliadelle. They'll get some sausage and peppers. They'll get some zeppelis, you know, for their lunch hour, and they'll start the investigation. My quana mine, not even by the hairs of my chinny chin chin. So this year, I'm going to go down to the San Gennaro Festival, as I go down every year, as many of you go down for the 11 days of festival. And I'm going to vet out the fake, phony, fraudulent saints, supposedly from the island of Sicilia. Saints I never heard of when I was growing up, raised on the Baltimore Catechism. And I'm going to see where some of this money goes to. I can't trace all of the moolah shmoolah, the fasools, the shimolis, but some of the money. Because why should a charity exist that runs the San Gennaro Festival that says that it's raising money for the poor, impoverished children of Naples be able to get away with fraud again and again and again? The only difference is there's no Vinny the Chin Gigante and Benny Eggs Mangano stripping off the currency of San Gennaro as it makes the rounds. Enjoy your cannolis.